stay at Jehovah's table for the banquet.
Well, just before we get started, I wanted to say on behalf of my wife, Donna, and I, and my mother-in-law, we're very grateful for our invitation of coming down here and show that you have interest in spiritual things. And we're very grateful for how well you've fed us since we've been here. So that means we're going to come back. It was just outstanding. I hadn't thought I was going to write down everything we ate last night. But in behalf of those that weren't there, I wanted to be kind to you, so I didn't do it. But it was just fantastic. And the breakfast that we had just this morning, I don't know if the rest of you got breakfast, but the breakfast we had this morning was just superb. And our host, Angie, she's been fantastic. We really want to take her back to New York, but we just don't have room for all her jazz music. So we're going to have to leave her here. We want to say, too, that we appreciated the Watchtower study. Speaking of food, Brother Bacon did a good job. Did a good job conducting nice logical flow and just helping everyone to benefit. Got a lot of comments from the friends. It's just encouraging, although we're at Bethel, it's encouraging just to be among our brothers and sisters and just hear expressions of your faith. And just outstanding reading, Brother Griffin. What a voice, what an accent. You probably could read for our Watchtower the Week tape, so I want to give your name to the brothers there at the Rohan, because I'm serious about that. I hope you're in good standing. But we wanted to talk just a little bit about staying at Jehovah's table. That's what we want to talk about. Stay at Jehovah's table. The fact that Jehovah has a table implies that he is a great host. And what a God, what a host Jehovah is. Jehovah invites all of his people to stay at his table. Now look at what type of host he is, what the Bible tells us in the 23rd Psalm. Let's turn there together to Psalm 23 and verse 5. Now this is referring to Jehovah as a great host. And verse 5 says, "You arrange before me a table in front of those showing hostility to me. With oil you grease my head, and my cup is well filled." Well, the fact that Jehovah has arranged a table tells us that he is the host. And when's the last time you were invited to someone's home for a meal, and they had such a great table that was arranged before you? Much like we experienced last evening. But not only that, not only do they have a table that is arranged for you, where you know you're going to eat, look at what the verse tells us in verse 5. He says, not only does Jehovah arrange a table in front of those showing hostility, that means Jehovah would make this arrangement at a time when things were difficult. There's a hostile world out there. But Jehovah has arranged a table for his people in front of all of those showing hostility. But there's more. Verse 5 tells us, "With oil you grease my head, and my cup is well filled." Now, the fact that oil is mentioned here, it denoted prosperity. It denoted exaltation. Oil denotes a time of joy. Whenever an individual would travel back in those days, in Bible times, they didn't have the cars, the trains, the planes, and the buses that we had. At best, they could ride on a beast of burden, but most of the time, they had to walk. So you know what happens when you walk in sand and around bushes and trees? You get a little dirty. You get cuts and scrapes. So a great host would not only arrange for the food, but they'd have oil there for you. And they'd rub you down. Now imagine you going to someone's home, they invited you over for a meal, and before you ever ate, they just kind of rub you down with oil. And they just gave you a good massage. Now, you haven't eaten yet, but you're just there, and they massage, and you say, "Here, get that side there, brother." And they just kind of rub you down a little bit before you ever eat. Well, that's what the psalmist says of Jehovah. That's the type of host he is. And he says, "With oil you grease my head," and he said, "My cup is well filled." In other words, he says, "I have everything I need at your table. There's no need in me going rummaging around in the camps of the wicked one trying to find something for sustenance, because I have everything I need right here at your table." That's the type of host Jehovah is. He says, you've arranged this for me, and I have everything I need. There's no need in me leaving your table. Look what he said in verse 6, speaking of Jehovah. He says, surely goodness and loving kindness themselves will pursue me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of Jehovah to the length of days. So the psalmist is saying, once I get at this table, I'll never leave Jehovah's table. He said, I'll dwell at that table to the length of days. The psalmist said, you couldn't blow me away from this table. I'm going to stay at Jehovah's table. I'll never leave it. And look what happens as long as you stay at the table. He said, goodness and loving kindness themselves will pursue me all the days of my life. In other words, brothers and sisters, if we stay at Jehovah's table, the Bible tells us that goodness and loving kindness will pursue us as long as we stay at Jehovah's table. When's the last time you've been pursued by something? You ever been pursued by a pit bull? How would you feel if a dog was pursuing you, a pit bull? It's not pleasant, is it? But when you stay at Jehovah's table, look what pursues you. He said, surely it will be goodness and loving kindness themselves will pursue me all the days of my life. You have nothing but pleasant things that will pursue you as long as you stay at Jehovah's table. Now, it reminds me of a story that a district overseer tells us. There's only about 3 black district overseers in the United States right now. But at this time, he was into circuit work. And this was a time when even in God's organization, due to the climate in the United States, there was segregation. So when he was into circuit work down in the South, the black circuit overseer would serve the black congregations, and the white circuit overseer, he would serve the white congregations. Well, this brother's in the Deep South. The state won't be mentioned to protect the innocent and the guilty. But he's in the Deep South. And they're going to their new circuit assignment. They're in the Deep South. And it's him and his wife. And they have a friend of theirs that wanted to come down and go with them to their new circuit. And they're going to visit a congregation in the Deep South. Now, the brother said, Mac, we already had a couple strikes against us. But as they're driving, they're on the way to their assignment. And they pass this little entryway, and out pulls a pickup truck and starts following. That was a pickup truck. He said, you could see the rifle hanging in the window. It was one of those pickup trucks. You ever seen one of those? Yeah, the rifle was hanging in the window. And this truck just started following. He said, well, it's probably no problem. Since we get up over the ravine and we turn left, he's probably just going to go on. They got up over the ravine and turned left. He looked in the rearview mirror, and the truck went over the ravine. The truck turned left also. He was following. He said, well, let's see how long this is going to go. He says, we already got 3 strikes against us. He said, one, we're in the Deep South now. He says, now one, he said, we're black. He said, two, we're Jehovah's Witnesses. He said, and three, we're in a Volkswagen. He said, you ever try to outrun somebody in a Volkswagen? But they just kept driving. And surely he figured by the time we find these friends home to where we're supposed to stay, he won't be behind us. But every turn they made, the truck turned. Went up over the little hill, and the truck went up over the hill. The truck was obvious. The truck sped up. Obviously the truck was following. He said, well, you know, I'm going to pull over. Just kind of get this over with. He told his wife and his sister. He said, now, honey, when I get out. He said, now, don't leave me. When I get out, don't leave me. But you just sit here. And I'm going to go back here and try to find out what this is all about. So he pulled over, the truck pulled over. The truck just kind of waited. And now he's sitting there and he's giving the instructions to his wife about what to do. He said before he could get out of the door, there was a knock coming on the window. One of those hard knocks, you know. Roll the window down. He said all of his adrenaline was gone, but he kind of answered in the deepest, intimidating voice he could muster up. He said, yes. And the man said, roll the window down. So the brother rolled the window down. And the man said, are you Jehovah's Witnesses? And the brother said, now remember, that was one of the strikes against us. He says, yes, we are. The man said, I thought so. He said, my mother's a witness, and I got all kind of food back here in this truck. I got cans of food and ham and liver, and I got a whole truckload of non-perishables. And I heard that the black traveling brother was coming down, and my mother would be so proud if I gave this to you. You made quite a few turns back there, didn't you, buddy? But you know what the brother said? He said, Mac, we learned we couldn't run from a blessing. He said, we couldn't run from that blessing. He said, we had food for weeks on end. But that's what the psalmist said. He said, if you stay at Jehovah's table, loving kindness will pursue you all the days of your life. It will pursue you. It will be as a result of Jehovah's loving kindness. Now imagine Jehovah being that type of host. Well, the nation of Israel did something that was shocking. They did something that was so unbelievable, the heavens couldn't believe it. The angels that were there in heaven, they said, we can't believe what we're seeing. We can't believe that the nation of Israel is leaving Jehovah's table. They couldn't believe it. With all of the loving kindness pursuing them to the length of their days, do you know that as a nation, they left Jehovah's table? Turn with me in your Bible to the book of Jeremiah, chapter 2. Here in the Bible, Jeremiah chapter 2 is one of the most shocking things that is ever recorded in the Bible. But this is what the nation of Israel did. In Jeremiah chapter 2, look at verse 12. Jehovah says, stare in amazement, O you heavens, at this, and bristle up in great horror, is the utterance of Jehovah. Because there are two bad things my people have done. They have left even me, the source of living water, in order to hew out for themselves cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot contain the water. Jehovah says, oh, you won't believe it, angels. He says, but stare in amazement and bristle up in great horror. He said, my people, they've left even me, the source of living water. And look what they left Jehovah for. They didn't even leave him for a well. A well is a source of water. Jehovah said they left me for a cistern. You know what a cistern is? It's a little cavity. It's a little crag, maybe in a mountain, a little cavity that catches runoff rainwater. It was just a little cistern. And Jehovah said it was a broken cistern at that. They didn't even leave him for a good cistern. He says, oh, you won't believe it. The angel said, we can't believe it. Jehovah said, that's right. He said, stare in amazement and bristle up in horror. He said, my people have left even me a source of living water. Can you believe that? Reminds me of one of the things that a member of the governing body told us there at Bethel. He told us something that was probably just as shocking to him, one of Christ's brothers. He told us of a young man that was there at Bethel, and of course at Bethel we have standards. We have dress code to meet Christian standards, but because of household and household law, we have certain criteria at Bethel. Now, for example, at Bethel, we get our hair cut every 3 weeks. That's law. That's household law. You're there at Bethel, you got to get your hair cut every 3 weeks. Either you cut it, or you, one of the barbers at Bethel is going to cut it, but it needs to be cut every 3 weeks. You know, there was a brother there that had a little problem with that. He didn't want to get his hair cut. It got so bad, you know, he had to leave Bethel because he didn't want to get his hair cut. Yeah, stare in amazement, oh heavens, and bristle up in great horror. Now here is a brother who has the privilege of serving world headquarters with the governing body, and he does not want to get his hair cut. So he left. Well, you know what happened? He went back home, lived in Florida. No knock on anyone from Florida, Brother Hudson, but he went back home, he went to Florida, and you know, he got a job. You know where he got a job? Disney World. Now, Disney World at that time, they ran a tight ship. You needed to get your hair cut in order to work at Disney World. Guess what he did? He cut his hair. He cut his hair for the Magic Kingdom and wouldn't cut it for the Messianic Kingdom. He cut his hair for Mickey Mouse and wouldn't cut it for the member of the governing body. The Bible says, stare in amazement and bristled up in horror. For there's two bad things my people have done. Can you imagine someone leaving Jehovah's table for a haircut and went and got it cut for Mickey. But that's what's taking place. Well, today, Jehovah is the great host. And the nation of Israel, having abandoned Jehovah, they left a source of living water. You know, they put their trust and their confidence in the surrounding nations round about. Jehovah says that my people left me, and they put their confidence in the nations around about. In Jeremiah chapter 2, let's turn back there again. In Jeremiah chapter 2, this time, let's look at verse 18. Jehovah explains it. In verse 18, he says, "And now, what concern should you have for the way of Egypt in order to drink the waters of Shihor? And what concern should you have for the way of Assyria in order to drink the waters of the river?" You see the problem? Apostate Israel turned their attention to Egypt and Assyria. They lost their confidence in Jehovah. Well, in Bible drama, Egypt pictures the world. Do you know today some will leave Jehovah, the source of living water, and they'll turn their attention to the world. And they get mad with God. They feel they don't have the things that they want. They feel they don't have the things that they need. And there's no need to go rummaging around the camps of the wicked one, because the psalmist said, Jehovah's a great host and we have everything we need here at Jehovah's table. You brothers and sisters, you're out here on the front lines and you have it hard. You got trials and tribulations. The governing body, they know that. They recognize what you go through. Those brothers are praying long and they're praying hard about you. Never think it's just a group of men that's in a brick building that's just printing literature. That's not the case. We hear them talk about you. We hear them pray about you. They're praying long and hard about you. They know you're out here on the front lines. They know what you're going through. Why, if you can hear one of those brothers' prayers on your behalf, it would probably scare you to death. You'd act right if you heard them praying about you. You'd act right. But they're really concerned. They think about you. I remember when I was a new elder, I was ready to go on a shepherding call. I was happy. The brother told me what we were going to talk to the person about. I did all my research. I was ready. I had a packet that thick, it was hot every time I read it. And so one morning, I was down in the dining room and I saw one of the members of the governing body there, and I said, I'm going to kind of share with him. When I looked up, I know he's going to bless this. He'd probably have a few things to add. Can't have much more. And that was all I had. I saw him sitting down, and I went over and I said, you know, we're going to make a shepherding call this evening. He said, "Mac, that's good." Brother Sidney, brother with the deep voice. "That's good, Mac. The brothers need encouragement." And I said, "Well, you know, this is what we're going to." I explained the situation. I said, "This is what we're going to kind of share with him. I want to kind of let him see my views. Maybe let me write an article or something. share with you what we have." And he looked at it. This actually happened. He looked at it. Kind of looked up at me. He read a little bit more. He looked up at me. He went ahead and read all the way down. He said, "Mac, you just don't get it, do you?" I said, "What's this brother talking about? I don't get it. Then all the research and all the publications that we have, what's this brother talking about? I don't get it." He said, "Yeah, Mac, I can see you just don't get it." He says, "Now, you're going to go on the call. You're talking about it. You're going to share this with the brother?" I said, well, I was. I'll tell you now, I left there with my head hanging. And as I was leaving to go back to my assigned dining room where I was supposed to be, as I was leaving, he said, "Mac, you're barely in the truth." He told me I was barely in the truth. But you know what he had told me before I left? He said, "Mac, just the way women show up at work is sexual harassment." I'm not saying anything to the brother. "Just the way they show up at work is sexual harassment. And you're going to share this with him?" I took what I had, tore it up, and threw it in the garbage. But that helped me to appreciate something. That helped me to see that the members of the governing body, Christ's brothers and other anointed ones, they understand what the brothers are going through. They understand exactly what you're going through. He said that women don't have to say anything, and it's sexual harassment. So they understand. You got it hard out here on the front lines. There's trials and tribulations. Satan wants to wrap you up in a garment of flesh, encase your heart in steel, and march you around in the ranks of the living dead. To this day, people are running to sin like iron filings to a magnet, and you're in the midst of it. They recognize all that you're going through, and they tell us over and over about to appreciate Job's loving kindness and stay at his table. Now, periodically we get talks there in Bethel, and that's when we realize, oh boy, these brothers love the friends. Because periodically we get talks from members of the governing body, and this one night we got a talk from one of the members of the governing body. That was a landmark discussion. Anybody that was in Bethel at that time, all we all remember that. It was about appreciating Jehovah's loving kindness. Now, the way the brother started the talk, he said, we're going to talk about something you know very little about, if you will ever understand it. And that's the way he started his talk. He says, I'm going to tell you now, same brother, deep voice, Brother Sibley. We're going to talk about Jehovah's loving kindness. If you'll ever understand. Now this is his introduction. He says, we're going to go back in the time when there was a new king in Israel. David is the king. He said, there's a new king in Israel. Now usually, whenever there was a new king, it meant great time and rejoicing for the family of the new king, but it meant horror and terror for the family of the old king. Because usually all of the boys of the family of the old king, they would be killed for fear they would come and try to avenge their father. So all of the boys would be killed off. But here he's telling us that there's a new king in Israel. And David did something that was shocking to the people. He did something that they knew very little about, if any of them could understand. David wanted to know, was there anybody left of the family of the old king? Not to destroy him, not to kill him, but David wanted to know, is there anyone left that I can show loving kindness to? Now, turn with me in your Bible to 2 Samuel chapter 9. In 2 Samuel chapter 9, at verse 1, let's read this account. 2 Samuel chapter 9 and verse 1, and David proceeded to say, is there yet anyone that is left over of the house of Saul that I may exercise loving kindness toward him for the sake of Jonathan? You see what David is saying? David is doing opposite of what would normally be done. Now, brothers and sisters, I have to tell you now, as he was giving this talk, you could hear a pin drop and we were sitting on carpet. That's how quiet it was. When he started this discussion and said, we're going to talk about something you know very little about, if you'll ever understand it, we all just started looking at each other. We have an affectionate term means, let's buckle up our seatbelts because he's going to take us some places. And he did. He put us there in Israel on the scene. But it helped us to appreciate the way they feel about the great crowd. The way they feel about the rest of their anointed brothers and sisters. Brothers and sisters, the way they feel about you. And he went on to explain. Now, verse 3 is interesting. It says, and the king went on to say, is there nobody of the house of Saul anymore that I may exercise toward him the loving kindness of God? You see what David is doing? He had a relationship with Jehovah. David knew Jehovah. He had received Jehovah's loving kindness. And now David, the king that is representing Jehovah, he says, I'm looking for someone to show loving kindness to. Now, Ziba, who was the attendant, but really Ziba said, well, there's not really anybody left. He said, well, there is one. And he's a cripple, and he lives over there in Lodabar. Now, Brother Silik said, Lodabar, Lodabar. That was the ghetto. He said it was across the tracks. No one wanted to live in Lodabar. And Ziba said, the only one left is a cripple, and he's over there in Lodabar. David said, that's the man. That's who I'm looking for. He said, you go to Lodabar and you get him. And he helped us appreciate that Jehovah today is looking for people. He's looking for his servants to show them loving kindness. Now, if those that were still conscious that hadn't fallen out of their chairs yet, why is he was giving this story? What he did next, he got all the rest of us. We just fell over. He reached down and picked up a bell, kind of like that bell Brother Hudson was ringing earlier this week. He picked up a bell and he said, dinner time in David's house. He said, picture David's house at dinner time. Who would you expect to be there eating at the king's table? Now, David was a handsome man. Everybody remember that? The Bible says he was ruddy and a handsome man, good looking. Now, beauty ran in David's family. They were beautiful people. Beauty ran in the family. Didn't do them much good, but beauty just ran in the family. So, who would you picture to be sitting there at the king's table? Remember David's children? Remember Absalom? Brother Silik said, handsome of a man. He was tall, had jet black hair. When they cut his hair once a year, his hair alone weighed 5 pounds. Yeah, you hear the sisters? His hair alone, when they cut his hair once a year, his hair alone weighed 5 pounds. Beauty ran in the family. So Absalom, handsome man, he was sitting right there at the king's table. Who else would be at the king's table? Remember Absalom's sister Tamar? The beautiful woman, and all the way he painted Tamar. He told us about Tamar. Now remember, Tamar was so beautiful, her half-brother raped her. Remember? She was so beautiful, her half-brother raped her. Beauty ran in the family. And Brother Silik helped us to appreciate probably the oils and the way she smelled at the time. Said she probably smelled like the flowers of Lebanon and the balsam oil of Gilead. He says, oh, just picture this beautiful woman. We were looking for Tamar that night. Me and the rest of the brothers, we wanted to see Tamar. And he just painted this beautiful woman just sitting right there at the king's table. Just beautiful people. And he said, you look down at the edge of the table, and probably there's Solomon there with his head buried in a book, sitting at the king's table. And by now, he starts strutting back and forth the platform. He's just walking. And he said, and in walks Joab. Now, that was David's nephew. Remember Joab? He was a warrior. Brother Silik said he probably walked in sunbaked and he was cut. See, the sisters understand what we mean. He said, in walks Joab, sunbaked, cut, and he just sits right there at the table with all of these beautiful people. Here's a handsome man. And all of a sudden you hear in walks a cripple with all of this beauty at the king's table. In walks a cripple. Now, Brother Silik said, probably all those children probably said, Dad, can he get his food to go, please? But that's when he started to lower the boom on us. You see, Mephibosheth was crippled because when the news came that his father and grandfather had been killed in battle, the nurse that was carrying him when he was a little infant, she dropped him, and he was lame in both feet from then on. And so he went over to Lodabar. He just lived over there as a cripple. But then Brother Silik, now for those of us that were still conscious, Brother Silik lowered the boom. He explained. He says, first of all, we all live in the ghetto. Now, no matter what you pay for your mortgage, oh, you live in a ghetto. This is a wicked and a dying and a terrible world. We all live in the ghetto. And he says we're all crippled, brothers. He reminded us, he said, Adam and Eve dropped every one of us. So, we're all dragging ourselves in. We're all crippled. Now, he said, you know the bad part about it? We're harder on each other than Jehovah ever will be. We're harder on each other than Jehovah ever will be. We feel that others shouldn't be at the table. You know, that's what makes it hard for some to stay at the table. You look up at some people, you know, you look up at the sister and say, she needs to quit. You look up at the brother and say, he's not going to make it. I can tell you now, he's not going to make it. So we're hard on each other than Jehovah ever will. Jehovah is looking for people like us to sit at his table. It's Jehovah's loving kindness it will ever understand. Jehovah wants us to stay at his table. Now, he explained the arrangements at this table with all of these beautiful people. And Mephibosheth, somehow he would drag himself in there. And David would Beckett, yes, go sit down. You can sit at the table. And he would drag himself in there. Now, he probably didn't understand it. When Mephibosheth would come and sit at that table, he couldn't understand it. One of the worst things in Israel would be a dog. Dogs were looked down upon. That's why it was such a disgrace if a person was killed and the dogs came and ate him up, like Jezebel. Dogs were looked down upon. Look at what Mephibosheth said. 2 Samuel chapter 9. Look at verse 8. When Mephibosheth would come to that table. 2 Samuel chapter 9 and verse 8. It said, at that he prostrated himself and said, what is your servant that you have turned your face to the dead dog? He said, I'm worse than a dog. He says, I'm a dead dog. Why are you turning your face to a dead dog such as me? Isn't that the way we feel about ourselves sometimes? We feel unworthy to be at Jehovah's table. There's things about us we don't want anybody to know. We compromised. We held back. Yeah, we all capitulated at times. We feel unworthy to be at the table. And at times we don't want to go because we figure they're going to point us out. Someone's going to stand up and say, what is he doing at the table? So it's hard to stay at that table. And our plates are so full and we have some terrible things on our plates, we want to get up from that table. And Jehovah says, stay at the table. You know, some of us, we just say, Jehovah, just let me die. That's the way some feel. They say, Jehovah, just let me. That's the way Mephibosheth felt. Just let me die. I'm not worthy of all of this. I know you know Jehovah, but if everybody else knew, I shouldn't be at this table. How many times do you think Mephibosheth stood up and said, can I be excused? David said, just stay at the table. Mephibosheth would look up and see all this beauty and say, I don't belong here. Now, David, can I can eat outside. No, just stay at the table. He had a place for him at the table. Now, the beautiful thing about this table, those homes of royalty at that time, they didn't sit upright the way we sit today in this Western world. They would usually recline, maybe like over on the hip, and they would lean on an elbow or the shoulder, and they would kind of recline at the table, so the table really sat low, and these homes of royalty had these large skirts or tablecloths, what they called them. They were beautiful royal garments of tablecloth that would cover the entire table, and it would cover everyone's legs. Well, Brother Silic helped us to appreciate that this beautiful skirt at the table, it pictured the ransom sacrifice of Jesus Christ. So when Mephibosheth sat at the table, that large skirt covered his legs, all his frailties, he was like everybody else. Because of that beautiful skirt, he was just as beautiful as everybody else at that table. He didn't understand it. But Jehovah said, stay at my table. I'm looking for people like you to sit at my table. Look at verse 13. 2 Samuel chapter 9 and verse 13. It says, and Mephibosheth himself was dwelling in Jerusalem, for it was constantly at the table of the king that he was eating, and he was lame in both feet. But he always had a place at Jehovah's table. Regardless of how he felt, he didn't understand it. But Jehovah said, I made a place. Never leave. Stay at the table. You know why David knew this so well? You know why David could picture Jehovah God? You know why David as a king said, is there anybody else left that I can show loving kindness to? David had been in this position many times. He appreciated Jehovah's loving kindness. Remember, David committed that sin, Bathsheba, killed her husband. Figured everything was okay, tried to cover it up. Now he's finally exposed. What a horrible thing he's done. Not just the adultery, but the murder. What a horrible thing. But look at what the member of the Bethel family told us. This is how David could appreciate it. Just hold your finger there, but let's turn over to 1 Kings, and we want to look at chapter 14. 1 Kings chapter 14. This is why David could picture Jehovah. David understood. Now in this biblical account in 1 Kings chapter 14, David is already dead. He's been dead for years. He's already dead. There are new kings in Israel. Many of them have been doing what Jehovah wanted. David's gone. But look at how Jehovah refers to David. 1 Kings chapter 14 and verse 7. Jeroboam was king. He was messing up. And Jehovah says, go say to Jeroboam, this is what Jehovah the God of Israel has said. For the reason that I raised you up out of the middle of your people, that I might constitute you as a leader over my people. And I went on to rip the kingdom away from the house of David and to give it to you. And you have not become like, notice this, like my servant David, who kept my commandments and who walked after me with all his heart by doing only what was right in my eyes. This is the same David that committed all of those sins. But you know what David knew? He knew that regardless of what he did, Jehovah did not allow his sins, his past sins that he was repented of. Jehovah did not allow that to becloud his view of who David really was. He said, David really always did what was right in my eyes. Isn't that amazing? Let's go back now to 2 Samuel chapter 9. Do we appreciate Jehovah's loving kindness? We know very little about it if we'll ever understand. The brothers want us to know that they love us. Jehovah loves us. In spite of how you feel, what you're going through, what you've done. Verse 13 applies to you. Can you see yourself there with all of that beauty? And you yourself, was dwelling in God's house among his people. And for it was constantly at the table of Jehovah that you were eating, although you feel lame in both feet. 1 brothers and sisters, dear God, give him glory. And always stay at Jehovah's table.